walking, Andy tired. Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he fast asleep. Send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue. What a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
All right, that was David Bowie singing Andy Warhol. I think that's a fantastic piece. And one of the things I love about it is that David Bowie is such a genius at remaking himself and trying different things. And also, he, of course, played Andy Warhol in the Basquiat film, the film about Basquiat. And like I said, we'll hear from Basquiat's band a little bit later in the show. So what an interesting combination, like Andy Warhol, who was so interested in image, and David Bowie, who's been such a master of image, to create this kind of overlapping of identities in this piece, and it draws on the idea of, you know, I can't tell the difference between the real Andy Warhol and the created Andy Warhol, which I think is also similar for David Bowie and his work. I once heard an interview, a fantastic interview with David Bowie, and he said he wished he could have hired a replacement to do the Ziggy Stardust tour for him, because he got so tired of doing that over and over again. So I like that piece because it reminds me of the dynamic possibilities of art, and how many mediums, when they overlap, create something very powerful. So in kind of a different vein, I'm going to play for you now one of my favorite radio stories about art. It's called Embroidery Felon, and it's produced by Jonathan Mitchell, and it was originally aired on Studio 360 at Public Radio International. And it's, you'll see that it's about a very innovative inmate who found his craft while he was behind bars. And so we'll go to that now.
To close the show today, we look at how materials at hand and the limitations of those materials can generate ideas and inspiration. Ray Matterson was in prison for an armed robbery that he'd committed with a toy gun to support his cocaine habit. He spent the first year of his 7.5-year jail term being angry at the world and at himself for what he'd done. Then he found a kind of redemption in a pair of socks.
There were commercials coming on for all the upcoming bowl games. It was Christmas season, 1988. And Michigan was slated to play the University of Southern California in the Rose Bowl. The man a couple of cells down from me was hanging out some underwear and socks to dry on the tier railings. And among his underwear and socks were a pair of tube socks with yellow and blue stripes, which are University of Michigan colors. And I thought to myself, I gotta have those socks. So I struck up a deal and I bought the socks for a pack of cigarettes, which was kind of the going rate. And I pulled the socks, the thread out of these socks, and I borrowed a sewing needle from the guard, and I designed a sewing hoop out of a Rubbermaid dish, tore a piece of sheet from my bunk, drew a block letter M, and I embroidered this maize and blue letter M, which I then sewed onto a little makeshift hat that I made. And my plan was to watch the Rose Bowl game and get some popcorn and Kool-Aid from the prison store and pretend as though I were in Pasadena. What happened, though, as soon as I started sporting my strange little Michigan hat around the cell block, "Yo, man, where'd you get that, man? Make me something." I was almost immediately inundated with requests for all variety of flags and sports emblems. "Listen, man, I really want you to make me a such and such." And I'd say, "Well, I'd really like to make you a Seattle Seahawks emblem, but I don't have any Seahawk green." And then the next day, sort of mysteriously on the bunk, Seahawk green socks would show up. The pieces just, and they started, they were involving myself and my own experience more and more into the pieces. I started designing images from my own life experience, you know, home life problems, my drug and alcohol abuse. "Where's Madison?" "Now he's up on his bunk sewing." Sports heroes, theater scenes, songs and peaceful thoughts a lot of times. I escaped into the artwork.
When you see it, you go, "Wow." And then you look closer under a magnifying glass and you say, "Wow," again. I mean, we're talking a work that's maybe 2.5 inches wide by 2.5 inches tall.
2.25 by 2.75 inches.
I think all his works are that small.
Once I was paroled, that was sort of my job.
I've seen all different kinds of work that Ray did. At the show last week, he had done one called Metamorphosis, which was like a butterfly.
A monarch butterfly.
Escaping from the cocoon.
Emerging from the chrysalis. I still continue to take the socks apart. The taking apart of the socks is sort of what happened in my life, because my life went from one thing, going into the, you know, into the unknown, into the dark, into the, it came apart, it was suspended animation, sort of, and then it was turned back into something emerging from the chrysalis, much more special than it had been.
Ray Matterson's work will be on display at the American Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore through September.
So that is Jonathan Mitchell's piece called Embroidery Felon. And I have to tell you, the work is on display at the Folk Museum of American Art in New York, which happens to be right next to the MoMA. And what's so fun is that I was there visiting, and friends and I were trying to get into the MoMA, and the line was so long that we decided to forsake that and go next door to the American Folk Art Museum, and which is filled with amazing treasures. And as I was walking around, I came up to these tiny, tiny pieces of woven work. And you really, they're small and incredibly detailed. This man can embroider baseball crowds, like crowds of fans watching a batter at bat with faces and different expressions on every single fan. And I have to say that the work is completely captivating. I've never seen anything like it. So if you're ever in New York, go there and find this. Plus, so much other amazing work is in that museum. Don't pass it by. And so that's one of the things that inspires me. And I hope that some of the things I'm sharing with you today kind of inspire you as we start to look forward into the next year and look back on the one that's passed. It seems like artists, we all need a little bit of inspiration to figure out what's the next thing around the corner. So the next thing around the corner right now is a band called Gray. And this, as I was saying, was one of the projects of Jean-Michel Basquiat. And I didn't actually know this till just recently, but I guess he played a lot of music, you know, and having that a very electronic sense. And I find this hard to believe, but apparently Vincent Gallo was in his band, but I haven't been convinced by the proof of that. So coming up here, we're going to hear a sample of this work that, you know, hopefully can be unearthed and round out the image of Basquiat that we have. So this is Gray. We'll be right back. So that was Gray, the band formed by Jean-Michel Basquiat. And I think that music is so intriguing. It just leads me not only to dream into reality, but to dream into his work. It seems to fit right in with it. This is KBOO Radio Portland, and you're listening to a kind of different episode of Art Focus today, where we're looking at different types of work and different things created by artists or about artists. Now, of one of the many things that did happen this year was that Oscar Brown Jr. died. And I wanted to take a minute to pay a little homage to him. Now, he was a stage performer and somebody who's inspired me and has played with issues in a way that I think is really provocative. And since it is the midst of Kwanzaa this week, I thought that I would end with him, particularly because Kwanzaa has been a family tradition in my family for all of my 33 years, and that this particular recording of Oscar Brown Jr. took place in Washington, D.C., at one of my dad's favorite jazz clubs. So here's Oscar Brown Jr., and we're going to kind of lead out with this, and this is his take on the reparations debate, shall we say, which has influenced my work as well. And so with this going out, I just want to thank everybody for listening. I'm Damali Ayo, filling in for Julie this week on Art Focus. I hope everyone has a wonderful end to 2005 and a joyous beginning to 2006.
You know, I always enjoy playing Washington, D.C. Makes me feel not only among friends, but close to the seat of government. Provides me with an opportunity to deliver, for example, this open letter pressed into my hands by a man on my street. If I'm not mistaken, I once read, back during that short spell I spent in school, where every slave set free was supposed to get, for slaving, 40 acres and a mule. Now, ain't no telling how much work was done by my ancestors under slavery's rule, but sure as hell the total's got to run at least 40 acres and a mule. Now, I'm not saying this to see folks sweat, because I'm not bitter, neither am I cruel. But ain't nobody paid for slavery yet about my 40 acres and my mule. We had a promise. That was taken back. When we hollered, it was hush, be cool. Well, me, I'm being rowdy, hot, and black. I want my 40 acres and my mule. Don't tell me not to get myself upset. Don't look at me like I'm some kind of ghoul. Just answer quietly, when do I get my goddamn 40 acres and my mule? No thanks, I'll take my own self out to lunch. No thanks, I'll dig me my own swimming pool and lay and play around with my own bunch. Yeah. I get 40 acres and a mule. Cause interest gotta go on, just like rent. I may be crazy, but I ain't no fool. 100 years of debt at 10% per year, per 40 acres and per mule. Now, add that up. Ooh-wee, look at that. No wonder y'all call great-grandma Jewel. Just pay me that and
call the whole thing square. Yeah, Lordy, 40 acres and a view.
I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cezanne. Cezanne, the father of cubism. Well, some people say that it was Picasso. Other people claim it was the Chirico. Some people think it was Modigliani. But they're all crazy. It was Paul Cezanne, the father of cubism.
When Paul Cezanne sat down to paint a flower on his face, he had to solve one problem, three-dimensional space. He said, from his content, he smoked a gitane. He was right, now he's Paul Cezanne.
Cezanne, Cezanne, the père de cubism.
Oui, oui,
hey, monsieur, get it.
Okay.
Show your guitar. Father wanted him to be an avocat. The potus looked at him and he went, "Menon pas. I want to be a painter. I know I can." Now his Hoover's in the Louvre. He's Paul Cezanne, Cezanne, the father of cubism. I had an aunt, she was in a coma. So I loaded up her bed and we took her up to MoMA. We got through the door, you wouldn't believe what began. She sat up and started screaming, "Hey, where is that Paul Cezanne? Cezanne, Cezanne, reckless father of cubism." Well, Paul Cezanne is famous now and I think that's pretty nice. His melons look like footballs and his apples look like dice. So all you would-be painters, get out your brush and can. You may be the next Paul Cezanne, 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 the father of cubism. Cezanne, Cezanne, the original father of cubism.
Well, you've had an opportunity to hear the complete Art Focus theme today. Anyhow, the time is almost 11 o'clock a.m. in Portland, Oregon, KBOO-FM. Coming up next, Democracy Now! This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Swahili Incorporated, specializing in contemporary and traditional African home decor and accessories, and networking with artisans in developing African nations to support economic growth and cultural exchange. Swahili Incorporated is located at 128 Northwest 12th Avenue between Cooch and Davis in Portland, and on the web at swahili-imports.com.